Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Standardized school testing, it's one of the lightning rods in the long debate over education and education reform in the United States. Now, when testing critics say that school testing does not measure actual education, or that it narrows learning, or that it unfairly punishes students, testing advocates frequently respond, well, schools have to be measured in some way, so what would you do instead? For the past 4 years, Jack Schneider has been working towards an answer to that question. He's an assistant professor of education at the College of Holy Cross, and his new book is Beyond Test Scores, A Better Way to Measure School Quality. And Professor Schneider joins us now in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so you're in education, obviously. It's what you do for a living. But what got you to think so in such detailed ways about how we should measure school quality?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I was actually trained as a historian, and this project fell into my lap while I was working on a totally different book. My daughter attends a public school in Somerville, which we happen to be pretty satisfied with, to say the least. And I've worked with teachers and administrators in Somerville. And we were somewhat surprised when the Boston Globe released a tool a few years ago called the Dreamtown Finder. And I was one of many who wasted away at least an hour trying to figure out where I should live.
And it had you like toggle various qualities of
exactly
that would go into calculating your dream town.
School quality was one of them.
Hipsterism was another.
Hipster, I couldn't quite figure that one out, so
we
I gave a low rating,
yeah.
And it kept telling me to move out of Somerville and head for the suburbs. I thought, like, well, I don't want to do that. So I was trying to reverse engineer my way into my own house, and I couldn't do that until I dropped concern with school quality all the way down to zero. And I thought, well, this is weird. And so I looked at the methodology, and they were using primarily SAT scores, which are even worse than MCAS scores when you're trying to figure out what the quality of a school is. And there's a great chart the New York Times put out a few years ago that people can find on their computers, I'm sure, showing the correlation between family income and SAT scores.
Right.
And so I did what any highly engaged academic would do. I started sending angry tweets. And presaging, I guess, political leaders who would later come to power that way. And they, I think, you know, really wisely turned it around on me and said, you know, thanks so much for your feedback. You know, would you like to help us make this better? And I thought, like, oh, that is not what the goal of my angry tweets was.
You just wanted to unload.
I did. And I ended up just doing a lot of free work. and we built a tool together called, that they called the Dream School Finder, which I begged them not to call the Dream School Finder, but it was so catchy.
But the point of this new tool and then the subsequent research that you've done, and we'll talk about how this is playing out actually in Somerville, is that you said that, hey, there are a lot more toggles or measures that should go into deciding what makes for a quality school.
Yeah, and not just that. The initial project was just to look at the available state data and be more responsible and more thoughtful and more ethical when looking at what's available and what it actually says about schools versus what it says about, let's say, demography. Because a lot of variables correlate pretty highly with race and family income.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't tell us about what the value added by the school is. That tells us about the home lives of children. And so, you know, that was one concern of the project. And then the other concern is that schools are not monolithic entities that are entirely good or entirely bad. They have various strengths, and those strengths line up with our values or don't line up with our values, right? And so one of the goals in that initial tool that we've moved far beyond, but one of the goals of the initial tool was to have, you know, multiple values that people could weight according to their own priorities and beliefs.
So it's interesting because you say that, as you know, after you worked with the Globe and you got more into trying to find out, like, how do we quantify or even capture data around these other aspects of education that you're talking about, that, you know, most places that's not even collected. So you went ahead though and partnered with Somerville to try and do that.
Right.
So can you just tell me a little bit more about sort of what are the factors, what are the data sets that you looked for in terms of how you measure school performance?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, the project in Somerville was actually born out of some criticism of the tool we built for the Globe, where people thought, because of that name, Dream School Finder, that this was my version of a perfect school rating tool. And it wasn't. It was just a more responsible use of state data. But those conversations led to a conversation with the mayor of Somerville and then Superintendent Tony Pierantozzi about, well, what would an actual dream school tool be? That conversation eventually ended in me saying, unless we are going to begin at the beginning and figure out what we actually care about, I don't want to do this project. And they said, let's begin at the beginning.
Yeah.
And that's a big step that we've skipped, right? We assume that the data we have are the data we want about schools. But we never had a national conversation about what we care about and what we value. And so we began that project in Somerville first by looking at national polling data, then by looking at educational research. And then we held focus groups with parents, teachers, students, community members, and those were in multiple languages, all district administrators and all principals in the district.
Mm-hmm.
We've since scaled this project up to six different districts, and we've done the same process in all six districts. And we built a school quality framework that has roughly three dozen separate metrics included.
Yeah.
And we've tried to organize those into common sense categories that people will understand when they read them.
So
those categories are
teachers and teaching environment.
Yep.
Right. School culture.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's a lot of subcategories.
Yep.
Here. Right. Resources, academic learning. And test score growth is in academic learning. It's one of the subcategories, and character and well-being.
Yeah. And so those are five easy to interpret, easy to understand buckets that we can all have conversations about when we're talking about the quality of our schools. And I think it's important to note that some of those are inputs and some of those are outcomes, because both matter. And you've got to measure both, because in a reciprocal accountability system, you're not just holding schools accountable for results, but you're holding the community and the district and the state and the federal government accountable for providing the necessary resources and inputs to achieve those results.
Right.
And only then, by tracking both inputs and outputs, can you figure out, okay, here are our outcomes and here's why we're achieving those outcomes. Because a big part of the problem with the current system, we've got these test scores, but why are these our test scores? Is it because we're teaching to the test? Is it because we've narrowed the curriculum? Is it because our students come from high-income backgrounds where they were reading at age three? Is it because our teachers are amazing? Is it because our students are super engaged? Those are five pretty different answers.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to have more information so you can have a more nuanced and more thoughtful conversation about why our schools are doing however they're doing.
Right. So forgive me, this might seem a really basic question, but does this new framework provide a means to assess how well a school is doing, or does it provide a means to say, this particular school is good for this particular kind of family? Do you see what I'm saying? Because it's not as absolute as saying 60% of your students are proficient at the third grade MCAS math test.
Yeah. You know, I think the answer is both, right? That a good system would do both of those things. It would recognize that different people have different priorities, different communities have different priorities. And it would also recognize there are some things we want to do really well for all kids. And one of the ways we've talked about it for the consortium that I helped co-found, which is called the Massachusetts Consortium for Innovative Education Assessment, is a vision of a system where there would be minimum standards for all students in all schools, in all districts that are a part of the consortium for particular outcomes like, let's say, student academic learning. And then districts and schools could set their own target aims,
right,
for other categories or for other subcategories, right? And so there's a way to hybridize this where you're saying every school can be different, but we want every school to meet a certain threshold for, you know, the following categories.
Okay, interesting. Because as I was reading your book, and especially given that we're here in Massachusetts, one question I kept coming back to is, there is such passionate debate over testing for, you know, for a lot of reasons. But one of them is that testing advocates, excuse me as I bonk my own microphone here, that's the passion with which I feel this. But testing advocates say that we need tools to measure student performance in order to have accountability. That if we don't have those tools, then, you know, students can get lost in all sorts of other fungible data. And so they don't want to lose the clarity that something like MCAS or MCAS 2.0, whatever we have now, provides. Do you hear that concern? And how is that concern addressed in the framework that you've got here?
Yeah, we absolutely run into that concern. And I think that's a big part of the reason why standardized testing and the standardized testing regime has endured despite widespread dissatisfaction with it and despite its very obvious shortcomings. It has endured because you can't replace something with nothing. And despite the flaws of the current system, transparency is good. People like information. Parents particularly are really thirsty for information about schools. And if we don't give it to them, mm-hmm. they're going to find it some other way and potentially through some problematic means. There's a lot of research, for instance, showing parents relying on race as a proxy for school quality, right? Which is a really troubling way of going about things, more troubling than relying on standardized test scores. So, you know, our approach is not to say, well, let's throw out data entirely. Our approach is to say, well, let's figure out what we care about. Let's try to measure those things. And that includes student academic learning. And right now we're building a performance assessment system that will measure through teacher-created, curriculum-embedded classroom performance tasks that will provide reliable, valid data on what students are doing in classrooms that will actually capture whether or not students can write an essay, whether or not they can speak a foreign language, if they can finish a work of studio art, right? The things they're actually doing in classrooms rather than externally created standardized tests scored by a machine right. that in many cases are tangential to the curriculum at best.
Yeah.
And so we want to provide this data. And I think it's important to note that the data is not solely useful for the purpose of accountability. And in fact, you can have accountability without carrots and sticks because the test and punish regime presumes that the public is irresponsible and disinterested and will not hold their own schools mm-hmm. accountable if they have the information.
So let me ask you another question along these lines. Again, it's just because I know that so many of our listeners care so deeply about this what about those parents who say that they hear they're very attracted to the granularity of the kind of information and data that in your framework that you're looking for, and also it honors the truth that like education is deeply it's complex, it's personal, people bring all sorts of values to it, so we need a more complex tool that reflects that, so that educators and families and policymakers can all work together. But then also I think a lot of parents have this fundamental like bar and they say, you know what, for generations we have had an achievement gap. I mean, that's a very powerful phrase. We've had an achievement gap and we need to have tools that measure how much we are closing that gap. And so if we make everything a little too relative, you know, like how is this student performing vis-a-vis how she was doing at the beginning of the year versus how close is she to getting to where we need her to be, that maybe they feel it's a less powerful tool than straight up testing.
Well, I think that's a false choice, right? Yeah. Because you can absolutely track a student's individual progress and track where that student is in relation to his or her peers
yeah.
without saying that it is the school's responsibility alone for closing gaps across income groups or racial groups, right? For too long, we have assumed that schools can solve poverty and they cannot. And schools can absolutely begin to close the gaps that are opened up from birth for children. Absolutely, they can do that, but they absolutely cannot do it alone. And to hold them accountable for that not only leads to schools inevitably being punished for things that are outside of the control, but it also leads to those schools being stigmatized as if there is something wrong with those schools, when in many cases, they're doing far more in terms of promoting student growth than many other schools. And I would add to this the fact that, you know, in many quote-unquote high-achieving districts, we see lots of students, and this wouldn't be, you know, through data collected through our project, but just you do a walkthrough of the school, you talk to students, you talk to teachers, you see lots of flaws that are not revealed by standardized tests. Teachers recognize them, but often only have their own anecdotal evidence. Parents often recognize particular aspects, though they're relying solely on their own child, right? Our conversation ends up being pretty disjointed, and we're not on the same page. And if we had a core set of data organized around some common elements of school quality that we all agree on, and that's a big part of the goal in this framework, is to give us a starting point for a conversation, we can get beyond these assumptions about what a good school is or what a bad school is.
So in the last minute that we have, let's come back to your work in Somerville, right? Because this has been going on, like your research and collecting these data and turning it into to something that districts can use. What difference has it made in Somerville?
Yeah, so, you know, it's been slow, right? Because if you're doing anything in a grassroots way, you've got to build it from the ground up. But we've already seen the school committee setting broader goals around the whole child and then beginning to track that data. We built a cool new data tool that they have access to. We've got school improvement plans that are being developed by principals and teachers and parents and community members in conjunction with each other, where all of a sudden they're able to track in a quantitative way the goals that they've set for their school. They've been able to look and make empirical decisions about how the school's doing. It's made our conversations better.
Well, Jack Schneider is Assistant Professor of Education at the College of Holy Cross, and his new book is Beyond Test Scores, A Better Way to Measure School Quality. Professor Schneider, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, let us know what you think. Are there better ways to measure school quality than testing? And what do you think of the ideas that you heard from Professor Schneider? Let us know at radioboston.org. That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.